You're listening to the Racing TV podcast On The Wire.
You're very welcome. It is On The Wire. We're after the Guineas weekend and we're before the Guineas weekend. We've had an absolute roller coaster of action since racing returned. And today it's Brendan Duke and Fran Berry in the house. We're still on social distancing. We're on Skype, but we've a very special guest in the form of Jim Bulger. We're going to stagger his interview out like Dukey staggering out of Leopardstown after a particularly good night on the summer circuit. And we'll also have Dunnock O'Brien talking about his filly for the weekend and the joy of six. I want to, first of all, welcome Fran Berry to the show. I think you may have been on before, Fran, but I was talking to the bosses in the old racing TV land, and they thought it was a bit of a coup to get you. So evidently you're making an impression on someone anyway.
good to be on, Johnny. And, you know, it's just great to be back on and working again, isn't it?
You enjoyed listening to Dukey's kind of tales of life on the podcast last week.
I did. I was actually out walking on my daily walk with the headphones on, listening to it. And if anyone seen me break out laughing spontaneously, they would think I was gone mad. So a bit of a classic moment there.
Speaking of gone mad, Dukey, what's up with you?
Well, I'm making a concerted effort to be more chipper at the moment because it's come to my attention that I've been moaning a lot about the lockdown and people don't want to hear about this. They want to move forward. But Tuesday was particularly hard, I have to say now, because if I cupped my ear, well, I'd really want to cup it now, but if I cupped my ear, I could probably just about make out the sound of thundering hooves from Leopardstown. But I couldn't go to it, Johnny. I couldn't go. That was particularly trying. But I'm upwards and onwards. I'm going to stay chipper, put a pep in my step and a sweet tone in my voice. And let's look at the Irish Guineas.
The absolute nonsense that is, you know, Jessica Harrington, Kevin Prendergast, our guest Jim Bulger, and Dermot Weld not being able to go racing for a classic weekend at a 90 million development that is basically acres of space. Well, I don't need to tell you that. If you think that this is reasonable, fair enough. But we will talk about that later, and hopefully sense will prevail very soon. But let's go to the last weekend, because we had two unbelievably memorable, I thought, classics. And let's start with the 2,000 guineas into the 1,000 guineas.
Head down into the dip now. Pina Tubo trying to see off Wichita. Cameco behind those. And then Military March as they head into the closing stages. And it's Wichita at the moment in the purple cap. Cameco, the far side of him, going through to lead late on. Cameco's one to Wichita's second, Pina Tubo. There's Love now in the blue and orange down the centre with Ryan Moore come through to take it up. But the yellow jacket of Cloaker Spirits is backing on well. Final Song with a white cap behind those. Quadrilateral is next, but it's Love who's clear. She's well clear as they race to the line. 3 or 4 length victory for Love in the Kipco 1000 guineas to Cloaker Spirits Quadrilateral.
Open an account with BarwinRacing.com and receive a €30 or £30 free bet when you have a bet of €10 or £10 at evens or greater. T's and C's apply.
Fran, I want to start with you. Pina Tubo, to my mind, he looks like he's either plateaued or hasn't trained on to the extent of the likes of Wichita, who would have had more scope in any case. You have a slightly different theory on this.
Slightly different theory, Johnny. Maybe he hasn't improved and the others have caught up with him, which is very possible compared to what we've seen last season. But I just felt that he was going as quickly as William Buick wanted all the way. He just appeared to be on his head. Maybe things are happening a bit too quickly for him. I'd give him a chance. If he goes to St. James's Palace, that mile climbing a hill into that straight in Ascot with nice ground, I think he could see a different horse.
It's not like he ran a bad race now at the same time, you know, and he came back on the bridle. He wasn't beaten all that far. So I'm just not sure, Dukey, where the improvement is going to come from him at this stage.
Yeah, no, it's interesting you mentioned how he snapped back on the bridle, because he was off it from a long way out, and I thought when he snapped back on, oh, here we go, we're going to see the surge now, and it just didn't really come. It's an interesting theory Fran has, because I was actually I wasn't sure about his Dewhurst run, because it was a fraction disappointing, to tell you the standard he'd set that season. And I thought maybe it was the ground, but maybe he does want a bit of cut in the ground, or maybe it's a new market thing. It's only one run. It wasn't a bad run. I suppose we'll give him one more chance in Ascot.
And Fran, Love was quite simply sensational. I know Jessie Harrington's filly didn't run her race, but you know, the likes of Quadrilateral seemed to pretty much run her race. And if ever there were a pointer to, and this is all after time of the highest order, but if ever there were a pointer to stable confidence, sending one horse over, one of having had a, quite a few kind of options for the race, and then she does that.
Oh, it was very impressive, Johnny. And as you said, Aidan O'Brien, one runner in a Phillies Guineas, normally you'd have three, four, five possibly on occasions. And then, you know, she had a nice smooth run down the outside, but once Ryan got her own out of dip, the way she powered clear, like, you know, she put four lengths between herself and the field, as you've seen later on. And, you know, you'd imagine that's her minimum trip. And when she goes up in distance, look, she'd probably be a champion at a mile, but up to 10 furlongs, she's going to be extra special, I'd say, at this stage.
Yeah, because if she does stay, like, where's the plateau of her ability? Because, I mean, the way she finished that race was just, and this is proper quick round as well. I know it's stamina, but she obviously has plenty of pace.
Yeah, she doesn't lack it. She was in her comfort zone all the way. And he was a bit disappointed on a day that she wasn't possibly at her best, you know. And it was a funny race on that occasion. And I'd say we'd seen the real love on Sunday, obviously. And, you know, she's a mixed pedigree, but looking at her now, it's all systems go to the Oaks.
She's a sister, Juki, to Peachtree, who would have stayed a mile and six comfortably. So where do you see her ending up?
Well, I imagine they'll have a go at the Oaks. It'd be very hard to turn that down. I mean, it's an experiment, an ongoing experiment that Galileo to Pivotal Mares, and it's been quite successful. So I imagine she'll go for the Oaks. She'd take an awful lot of beating in it. I mean, I don't want to say she could get away with not staying, but she almost could. I mean, that was a devastating performance. And it's very hard to tell on television. This is another time when you miss being in the parade ring. But she looked to have just done so well physically. The backside on her, that was the noticeable thing when I saw the television pictures. Again, it's very hard to judge on the television. But I don't remember as being a particularly imposing physical specimen as a two-year-old. I might have that wrong. Take notes. This is why we should take notes. But she really did look to have come forward an awful lot. And I mean, she's pretty short for the Oaks, but I wouldn't like to be laying her.
I was having a beer, lads, in Sunday night, and put on the telly, and Aidan just appears with a post-race interview on a Zoom chat with ITV or whatever. It was just strange because it looked like possibly judging me, but there's no you know, you can't be judging this man any differently than any other year, because his start to the season has been sensational. And obviously he had a brilliant start to the week, but I suppose he was slightly upstaged at Nace by a sprinter who cost less than $3,000.
Forever in Dreams next with Rapid Reaction. Gustavus Weston as Skeptical hits the front under Joey Sheridan and strides on in the Anglesey Lodge Equine Hospital Woodland Stakes. It's Skeptical all over in strides, draws away for a fourth win out of five starts. Second is Southern Horse, then Buffer Zone Chessman, Gustavus Weston, Forever in Dreams.
Fran, I'm not going to lie, I love this type of story. You know, we had these connections in the news for less favourable reasons last year in the form of a Dundalk race, an investigation into which the IHRB confirmed to me this morning is ongoing. But let's celebrate what's good about, you know, horse racing. And this is so rare, Fran, that you buy a horse who's so well-bred, clearly has some or many issues. You take a punt on it, and next thing you've the fastest horse in Ireland.
Skeptical, what a story. You know, I thought you'd have to see it to believe it when he switched from the Dundalk Polytrack to Nace, up in class and everything, but he duly delivered, and you know, it was quite sensational, particularly in the last furlong, the way he extended once he got into top gear. And you know, going to Ascot next week with everything behind him for 2,500, it's a great story, and it might just give people a lift and bring a bit of good attention to the game.
Yeah, and I suppose, Juki, there was a slight question mark about the turf and the slight question mark about how much he would find off the bridle up the hill against proper horses. That's what impressed me most, because he travelled with his kind of usual enthusiasm, but it was just the way he burst clear in the closing stages. He's now 2 pounds below Soul Power at his peak. And in my time following racing in Ireland, I remember a horse that Fran used to ride, actually, was the best sprinter in Ireland when I was younger, Osterhazy, for the late John Mulhern. And thereafter, we'd the odd good sprinter, the likes of Soul Power, Slade Power, come to mind. But this lad actually could be the best of the lot.
Yeah, well, of course, we shouldn't forget the composer, Stravinsky and Mozart. It was sort of an afterthought with them, I'll grant you, but they were sensational. Also, did they come on back-to-back years? I think they might have, but I'd have to check that. Hugely exciting horse. The plucky underdog story would be just beautiful if it wasn't for the shadow that's being cast over the stable. But there's no doubt it's an interesting story. A couple of the fancied horses disappointed, but he's still the buffer zone is a fair horse, and you just don't see sprint races run like that. It's unfortunate that Batash stands in the way, because Batash is obviously one of the best sprinters of the last 20 years.
I'll put it to both of you. Can he beat Batash?
I mean, he can do, because what was nice? Was that the fourth or fifth run of his career?
One, two, three, four at Dundalk, so fifth.
Is the fifth run of his career. So he still has scope to improve. First run on turf, which is a scary thought. And Batash, Ascot isn't his bag, but even if Batash repeats the run from last year when he got close to Blue Point and may have been disadvantaged by track position, he's still going to have to find a few pounds. Skeptical. So Batash will be favourite to beat him, and a heavy favourite in the match bet. But you can understand why they fear nothing at the moment.
Just on him, Fran, right? So he's kind of lobbing away. He wins his maiden at Dundalk. He wins a handicap. He wins another race. So he's been basically doing it in races where he's looked like he's kind of been a bit out of his depth in a good sense. Now, maybe that was the case again at Naas, that he's just better than these. How does a proper sprint where they go like the clappers at Royal Ascot, does this suit Skeptical, or does it kind of take him out of his comfort zone for you?
It's going to be hard for him, Johnny. It's a totally different experience riding or racing against English sprinters. You know, Naas race, I didn't actually look at the sessions, but to my eye, it looked like the first 2.5 turns were quite steadily run, and buffer zone was quite keen. And at one point, Skeptical hit a little bit of a flat spot. It only took a matter of strides to get him going, but that was an extended 5 furlongs, and he's just going to face into a different scenario in the King's Stand on Tuesday. But that said, he's got a stiff 5 furlongs in Ascot, and if he's ridden by a master who let him work into the race, I'm sure he'll warm up into it.
I love, like, you know, when you think of Choisir and Oasis Dream Clash, and the fact that there are these two big sprints on the Saturday, or rather in the week of Royal Ascot, there's so much to look forward to, and best of luck to Connections there. We're going to hear now from Jim Bulger, the first part of Jim Bulger interview, where he talks about his winner at Leopardstown, which was earlier on in the week. It was actually a very good performance, this by 10-year ticket, a son of Rocket Gibraltar, who landed a bit of a gamble.
Yeah, that was a good performance, yeah.
Was
it
a surprise, or...?
You see, we knew from the first time he ran that he has a nice bit of ability, but he doesn't do any stroke at home.
Right.
So we didn't really know what to expect, but we felt that he was up to winning something like that. But, we now know that he'll improve from there.
And how would you assess your start of the season so far? You've had plenty of horses running very well, albeit only the one winner so far since the resumption of racing.
Yes, yeah, but they're running well. We had, I don't think we had any disappointment, and we didn't find anything to throw out. So that's always a good sign.
What did you make of the action at Leopardstown briefly, Fran? I suppose one of the talking points, really, to me anyway, was the defeat of Russian Emperor, who I thought should have won but didn't. Just maybe the race didn't pan out for him necessarily. And we had two nice horses in the maiden, Tiger Moth and Dawn Patrol, which was preceded by Innis Timon, who looks a lovely horse as well. All of these, obviously, Aidan had a four-timer on the day. But what was your take from Leopardstown?
Inner track and fast ground anyway, you know, it was a speed favour and track when you get to the inside in Leopardstown. So, you know, as we've seen, Russian Emperor had to come around two horses to go and challenge the winner, Caramont, and it just couldn't make up that deficit on that ground. You'd probably, you know, you can upgrade that run, but if he was a proper good horse, you would like to see him run him down when things weren't going his way.
Juki?
Yeah, I was a bit meh on all of the Leopardstown Stakes action. I agree with Fran. Cormorant is a likable horse who had the run of the race, but just the second, he doesn't seem to be coming forward mentally. He always seems to be a bit clueless in his races, and he got away with it in Nace, but didn't get away with it in Leopardstown. We'll see. He still has time, but that was a bit of a disappointing race. And then you had the Phillies trial. That was a complete mess of a race. I had a few quid on Peace Charter, so that was X-rated viewing for me. But there were a load of hard luck stories in that. So I probably should focus on that's pocket talk for me. 10-year ticket. That was a lovely touch. It's interesting you mentioned that. He was about 16s into eights, five minutes before the off. That's when you like to see it. Now, the race was marred by the misfortune suffered by the year of the Tiger. But it was a really nice touch. And he's an interesting horse. He's already gelded. He wasn't fancied on debut, but he's unbeaten now. And he certainly has a really good attitude. He knuckled down well. It would be interesting to know how he matches up against the horse that Jim is so sweet on for the Irish 2000 Guineas.
Because
he's a fair yardstick, and I'm always really impressed by these touches that come late, because we're in an age now when you have races priced up 48 hours in advance. You need to be able to keep your powder dry in the last 5 minutes when you can get a few quid on, and they certainly got a few quid on the 10-year ticket.
It's a change in face of bookmaking. I think that the show gamble is going to become far more of a thing. And the skeptical like Jim's horse is gelded, which is very, very unfortunate in many ways. But Jim does talk about the Guineas, as you mentioned, Juki. But this part of the interview talks about his experience of dealing with the coronavirus situation, his own skepticism about what was going on, and also the, let's call it insanity, because that's what it is, the fact that he can't go to Guineas at the weekend.
Well, I kept saying, people kept asking me, I don't know why they asked me, but anyway, when would we'd be racing? And I said, we'll be racing in May.
Right.
When things began to loosen up, we should have been in phase one.
Yeah.
Because we had proven with nine meetings, I think it was nine, wasn't it?
Yeah, the 10 actually.
There are 10 meetings behind closed doors, and that we could do it. So there was no reason why we couldn't be getting on with it.
And
so the government, the Exchequer was the loser, because they'd have had a nice bit of revenue coming from the betting if they had let it go when it should have gone.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all afraid to open our mouths because the people who were handling the situation seemed to be somewhat sensitive to other suggestions or criticism. Mm-hmm. So we all sort of shut up and recognized that was the situation. But maybe we should have been more vociferous and tried to prove our case from. Not that we should have had to do it, because, I mean, for intelligent people to examine a situation, they should have been able to see, well, these people did things very well on 10 occasions. So why would they not do it now and let them at it? But then they seem to be worried about the public perception. So that was a big problem for them.
Did the public perception of racing change a bit after Cheltenham?
Well, you see, human beings being human beings, there's a certain percentage that always wants something to gripe about.
Mm.
And they had a semi-legitimate gripe about Cheltenham, which probably, after, you know, the whole thing sort of deteriorated, I think, on about the Wednesday or Thursday. And maybe at that stage, Cheltenham should have been called off.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. But
the worst thing from an Irish point of view was allowing the jockeys to come home from Cheltenham and then go to the races in Navan the following day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a terrible miscalculation.
Well, just on that, like, how would you generally, what's your kind of summary of the response here in this country to it? Because obviously a lot of people have died, and we seem to be coming out the right side of it, but I suppose mistakes were made as well.
Oh, sure, don't get me going on mistakes.
Mm.
The mistake that was made with regard to whether you want to blame, I suppose it should have been the Turf Club. What do they call themselves nowadays?
The IHRB, yeah.
Yeah, the IHRB should not have allowed the jockeys to go racing.
Mm.
And everybody... all racing personnel, stable staff, trainers, jockeys, the whole lot should have been told to isolate for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I had two staff who go to Cheltenham every, and I wasn't really all that happy with their going in the first place. Mm-hmm. But I didn't say anything because I knew it meant a lot to them.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, they quarantined for 2.5 weeks. So, like, if I was able to quarantine two of my staff for 2.5 weeks, the people with the muscle should have been able to decree that nobody goes racing who's been in Cheltenham for 2.5 weeks. But instead of that, the jockeys were masquerading around Navan the following day.
Mm.
Like that was a terrible dereliction of duty.
And
the trainers should have seen to it that their jockeys didn't go to Navan the following day.
And in terms of your operation in Coolcullen subsequently, did this impinge on Kevin Manning's day-to-day existence when there was no racing on, and did you have to lay off any staff?
No, we kept everything going.
And Kevin?
Kevin normally comes down about a month or 6 weeks before the season starts, and it was no different this year.
And in terms of Kevin, his defiance of his size to keep going, and I suppose even age at this stage, perhaps it doesn't actually get... enough press, because we talk about Frankie Dettori and Mick Cannane riding into his 50s, and obviously Leicester rode very late, but you know, Kevin has had serious weight problems all along as well.
Well, sure, he had to prove you wrong, because you were retiring him about 7 or 8 years ago.
I wasn't, but anyway, go ahead.
So that probably was an incentive to keep going.
And it's incredible just how much he loves the game to keep going and never seems to complain.
No, never.
Now, would you be the complaining type about the fact that yourself, Kevin Prendergast, Jessica Harrington, Dermot Weld are in a very select club at the moment who actually cannot go racing to the Guineas this weekend?
Well, I would be going racing, except I don't want to... I don't want to queer the pitch for everybody else.
Right.
And I don't want to stoke the tiger.
Right.
I'm fairly sure that I would win it on the ages legislation would whip the farm.
It'd be an interesting case as well. It would garner a bit of publicity.
Well, about 15 years ago, I was asked to ride in a charity race at Leopardstown, so I would have been 60.
Right.
And only very slightly obese.
Right.
In inverted commas.
Hard to imagine.
And I applied for a license, and they turned me down on age grounds.
Right. So you've had a bit of precedent here.
I dug out the legislation anyway, and I sent it to the Turf Club, and I got my license the following day.
Did you ride in the race?
I did, yeah.
How would you get on?
As far as I remember, I might have been second to Ted. I think Ted won it.
Right, lads. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but this is absolutely bonkers. Jim Bulger cannot go racing at the weekend. He may win the Irish Guineas, can't go racing. Jessica Harrington may win the Irish Guineas on Sunday, can't go racing. Dermot Wells, Kevin Prendergast, ditto. And I just don't know where to start on this, really, or end on it.
Well, let's start and end with insanity, because that's what it is. I mean, we're living our life with crumbs from the table from the government. I see today that maybe they might let us go for a haircut at the end of June. And I mean, it's getting to the stage now, Mike Barnett, where it's scaring small children. But you don't hear that, do you? You just hear about, well, I don't know, but lives could be lost, Johnny. Lives could be lost, so you can't have a haircut. The new chipper me doesn't want to talk about this, but insanity is a good word. Let's go with that.
Fran, your hair doesn't seem too bad, which would raise a lot of question marks, really.
It's self-organized, would you? My wife gave a little trim and
organic.
It's organic, yeah, homegrown. So it's hanging in there anyway. So that's the main thing during lockdown.
On the
over 70s thing, I suppose HRI did have to meet every kind of a criteria, but
and it was
when you see last Monday 5-hour queues outside IKEA with kids in queues and hundreds of people, it just doesn't add up, you know.
It's time to talk guineas, right? Let's start with the 2000 guineas, which I think is going to be an absolute cracker. But before all of that, here is Jim Bulger talking about his runner, Fiscal Rules.
He ran the temperature after the race, and the temperature stayed up for a few days. And I think off the top of my head, you need to give a horse a week for every day he has the temperature. So that's what we did. And we'd run out of time then at that stage. But we always knew what we had.
Now, this is intriguing, because when I was getting into racing a little bit after that, I did kind of just happen upon perhaps your golden era when you had the likes of Teofilo, a new approach, and you had your gamble, as it were, on Galileo really paid off. So where does this lad stand that you're not unlike you now to dodge a challenge at all, because you're sending a maiden straight into the guineas?
Unfortunately, if we had got back on the 23rd of May, I would have been able to get her run into. But that's not possible now, and I'm not going to miss the guineas with him, because I believe he is a guineas horse.
I'm not trying to, you know, be upping you to the nth degree here or whatever, but your gallops would be good enough that you wouldn't necessarily be overly worried, would you?
Well, he's only been on a race course once, and that was when he went to the Curra last year. So he will be somewhat inexperienced, but he seems to have a nice level of talent. So we're going to let him put it on display anyway and see what happens.
How did he winter?
Very well, but he was always a horse that you would expect to winter very well, because he was unfurnished as a two-year-old, and that's why we didn't run him until late. And he wasn't very well teed up for that run.
Really?
No. So we'd be hoping that there's a nice bit of improvement there.
You've got to be thinking of him as a potential Irish Derby horse as well on pedigree, are you?
He could be, yeah.
When you look at the half-sister by Vocalized, won over a mile and a half in good company, and obviously Make-Believe would have a bit of stamina as well.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely better than my last Derby winner.
Now, this is an intriguing horse, Fran, because I think, in fairness to Jim, he's had a fairly quiet sort of 2 or 3 years. But this horse, he's bred by Jim. He's by a stallion who's very locally based in Make-Believe, Promising Stallion. He's quite well related. But that run behind Wichita, when Jim says he wasn't fully tuned up on debut, reads really well. What do you make of him? What do you make of the race?
Look, it's probably not a vintage 2000 guineas, as you'd expect. Maybe we know UK challengers is a little bit underwhelming in some respects for me, but I suppose Fiscal Rules, given the year that's in it, his maiden the ones behind him didn't really do a lot for the form since, you know, obviously White Sheet is very did, but if you go back through the third, fourth and fifth, they haven't really franked the form since, and the sixth might have been beaten last Monday. So we're taking it on what, you know, the opinion that Jim has of him and the manner in which he'd done it. But, you know, it's a big step up from him. We obviously haven't seen him since last August. I suppose it's an early question of what we had with Pinatubo last week. Is this going to the next superstar? You know, obviously what happened in Middle Park was a freak occurrence. Spoke to Geraldine's, he's confident that won't happen again. But we got the question of the trip. And I have no doubt if connections in a normal year, they might have went to Newmarket to find out about the mild and the car in an ideal world.
I'd be very sceptical about the trip.
I'd have my doubts myself. You know, his pedigree gives you some encouragements on his dam side, but Sire was quite fast. And looking at his runs up the car, now the moniker of Egypt when he beat him in the Phoenix Stakes, was soft ground, but he wasn't exactly running through the line later on. They're both needing the line, and you'd have to wonder an extra two furlongs. And an inside draw with a host of Ballydial horses. Will Colin Keane ride him forward and ride him safe, or will he ride to get the trip? It'd be interesting to see.
The Ballydial Battalion, Fran, like, I'm not really sure what to make of jockey bookings. Vatican City's been popular, Antipost, you know, well backed. He's ridden by Porrick Beggy, the obviously very good winner in Cormorant during the week. Royal Litham for me wouldn't be out of it at a price, but he's only like single figures now. Emmett McNamara rides him. Lopi Fernandez is ridden by Shamie Heffernan, and I certainly wasn't blown away by him at Newmarket. I didn't think he looked anything out of the ordinary. Then you've Armory, who had a couple of defeats going into the end of the season, including behind Pinatubo. I don't know. I'm not convinced.
Yeah, Armory, I suppose you got to go back, you know, that second last run Longchamp, that was a huge run behind Victor Ludrum. That form is probably leaves him bang there as the main Ballydial protagonist, if you like. But, you know, you'd wonder, would Shamie Heffernan have the choice? Maybe did ride Lupi Fernandez? I assume they're just putting whatever. But for me, I thought Vatican City was a Derby horse in the make, and he created a good impression at Dundalk, and I wouldn't be surprised.
A Derby horse in the making?
Possibly, yeah. Possibly,
that's a big
yeah.
shout on pedigree, no?
Yeah. He just he created a good impression. And obviously, in Newmarket, he was green. He was well beaten that day by Kin Ross. But in Dundalk, he was quite good. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him run a good race with a view to his stepping up and trip going forward.
Juki, what are your thoughts?
What are my thoughts, Johnny? Well, my thoughts are I've never not had a bet the Irish Guineas. So I will have a bet on something, but what a head scratcher of a race. I mean, Siskin is favourite. He's unbeaten, but essentially his last two wins, he won the same race twice, albeit on different ground. I don't think that form is any use. Lopi Fernandez, like you, I was very surprised to see Shamie booked, because we were only talking last week that Aidan was talking about a sprint campaign for him. Now, is this going to... How's the race going to play out tactically? Because if you remember in the Oaks last year, they ended up, I think they were trying to preserve Pink Dogwood's stamina, and they ended up letting Dettori have a solo on the front and gave up all their tactical advantages despite having more than half the field. Now, I don't think they'll make the same mistake here. I think they'll send Fort Myers up the road to test the stamina of Siskin. But I'm going around in circles with race. Curiously enough, like Fran, I'm going around in circles, but I ended up on Vatican City. Who it's purely a pedigree thing. I mean, he is out of the bluest of blue hens. That you're so thrilling.
I think this is the first time Fran has ever been wrong, because this horse is not going to get a Derby trip.
Well, I mean, when you look at Churchill and Glen Eagles, it would seem unlikely. Genetics is a tricky business. I would be inclined to go with you. I'm just to. Thinking too straight line with the horses he's related to, but he will get a mile, and he's around the 8-1 mark. It's a huge step up from winning a Dundalk Maiden, but in a race where I just don't like the race at all. He was the one I came down on, because she is just a wonder mare.
Last word for you, Fran, on this
race to watch, and I think Vatican City could be the best horse going forward, whether that's on Saturday. I suppose we have to give a little mention to the McAlpin train, Sinowan. He's probably got a better chance in the Phillies race on Saturday, but Sinowan wouldn't be out of it on that run behind Mogul, given the open nature of this race.
How do tactics work out at the Curra? We've seen a couple of kind of meetings where it's paid to be on the front end on the on probably the fastest ground you're ever going to get, or certainly would normally get this time of year in Ireland. How do you think the Curra race are going to pan out? I know it's as fair a track as you're going to get, but I have to laud the ground staff at these tracks, because you shouldn't underestimate what it's like to have 2 months in the east of virtually no rain.
Yeah, it looked, Curra's great, Nick. I was there last Friday. I actually bumped into Pacquiao and the Gallops, and they've been watering away with that new system, and it is in great condition. But, you know, the forecast, I think Brendan Sheridan said this morning, 5 to 10 mils tonight. And if you get that, that could be perfectly good ground and should leave it fair for all connections. You've seen last year, it all got very tactically. Obviously, Phoenix of Spain had a tailwind, a speed favourite track, and they probably got... Ballydoyle crew probably got too busy watching, too darn hot on that occasion. But generally, when it's fast ground, you need to be drawn low and go forward first 4 or 5, because you're just on that dog leg turn all the way, and it can be hard to, if you're trapped or wide, to get into it.
I think James Horse is interesting in that. I think he's obviously with the size of him that he should kind of come on a bit, and essentially just looks a horse at 14 to 1 with bar one that might be worth taking a chance on, given that I suppose I'm not overly convinced with an awful lot of others in the race, Fran.
Yeah, definitely. And we got to give a mention too to Free Solo, Jessica Harrington's runner. You know, I haven't seen him since last July, but he created a big impression when he won that occasion. And you know, like we're looking for something to beat the favourite here, and it's a very, as we said, a very open contest. And he rattled off fast ground that day in Leopardstown. He really strode out well in it, and a likable professional horse. I know he's been off a while, but given the stable form, you can't dismiss him.
Just going back to Nace, Nordic Passage produced a really, really likable performance to win under Dun O'Connor. He's back at 6 furlongs in the equine medi record handicap at 5.10. I think this is a horse that's, bizarrely enough, he's actually raced very, very little on turf, and he absolutely revelled in it at Nace. He bolted up. He's run under a penalty. I think there's going to be a lot of pace on in that race, likes of Geological, and he's very interesting for me under the excellent Dun O'Connor, who's still claiming, despite the fact that he's obviously quite a tall lad. Do you like Anthony Nelson, the card on Friday, Fran?
Yeah, that horse has a chance, actually, but I would mention Dark Vader in that race, Johnny. I thought the fact Joseph's backing him up very quickly, he didn't get home over that 7 furlongs in Leopardstown, the Guineas trial on Tuesday. I think 6 furlongs his right trip, and he ran perfectly fine on bad ground in Nace the first day of the season. He's a horse I like. And in the Irish Lincoln, number seven, he's drawn 9, Tauron Shaman, trained by Jessica Harrington. If he pitches up anywhere like the potential he showed when he won in Killarney and Galway, it didn't happen for him in Longsham on bad ground, but off mark in 96, I think he's going to be very competitive in a very compressed handicap.
Very, very nice horse. Dukie, what do you like Friday?
Okay, so I respect your horse, Sue, in this sprint. He's £6 well in. This is a much better race than Nace, though. I'll have a few quid on Ice Cold and Alex, who I always back. He never wins, but he always places.
You're essentially tipping a horse who you say never wins.
Well, he is handicapped to win. He was very unlucky behind Verhoeven. That was an extended 6 furlongs. This trip is probably a little bit sharp for him, but between Verhoeven and the horses you mentioned, they will go a right clip. He's a very strong traveller. He's definitely handicapped to win, and I'm just going to keep backing him. That's just what I'm going to do. And a couple of others. So this Lafayette, I was just looking at, there's only one or two bookmakers up, and we probably shouldn't pay too much attention to prices at this stage, but this Lafayette has gone in an absolutely wild price for Noel Mead. He's in the 5.40, a 7 furlong, 3-year-old handicap. Any of them could step forward any minute, but he looks pretty well handicapped off a mark of 84. He's probably a little bit unlucky in that foreign auction final in Nace last October. He's only had 3 runs, and seems ground versatile, and significantly is well drawn in 4. And then we have to talk about the Moorsbridge Stakes. What an absolute belter this is. Closes out the card. So again, I had a look at the betting, and I had in my head that Fleeting would be favourite because she... like Ice Cold and Alex, she's a luckless, well, she's way more luckless. Like, she is the most luckless horse that I can remember in history. But anyway, I thought she would be favourite with Aiden Sable form and what have you, just about. And I just assumed Search for a Song would be second favourite. But the betting I saw, she was favourite. Then La Trobe was second favourite. Best of luck to him, given these fillies £5.
Mm.
And Search for a Song was in at 4-1. Now, that just looks a completely wrong price to me. I mean, I went back and looked at that Irish Ledger. What a performance. The amount of energy she squandered early on. Now, I know Kew Gardens was a bit undercooked, but he can't have been that undercooked, given that he went and won the Stayers race on Champions Day in England a couple of weeks later. And, I mean, she's only had 5 runs. They put a pacemaker in for her. I love this. Now, the pacemaker's only rated 70. So, well, low 70s, I think. So we'll see how far she can carry her into the race. But Search for a Song gets the track, the strong pace set by her stable mate. And it won't matter if she's in front two and a half or 3 furlongs out, because she was in front for so long at the Irish Ledger. She's only had 5 runs. I think she's plenty of speed. I don't have her down at a stair. And how, if she's third favourite for that race, I'll just be emptying the clip, because that has to be the wrong price.
I'm not sure how we're going to better that throughout the remainder of the show. We do have plenty more coming. And let's start with Dunnock O'Brien giving the joy of 6, because this ties nicely into a preview of the Guineas, the Fillies Guineas on Saturday.
Favourite race course would have to be Newmarket. It's very fair. I've had a lot of luck there. It's an incredible track. You have a mile and a quarter straight. And I was lucky enough to win 2 classics there. My favourite horse would have to be Saxon Warrior. He was incredibly talented, gave me my first classic, and he was very, very good on his day. One change I'd make to racing is I'd put the weights up. I think they're pointlessly light. We're going to get to a situation in a few years' time where there's no apprentices able to do bottom weights, and it'll probably take that for them to put them up, but it'll happen, and I don't see why it's taking so long. The best bet I've ever had, I've literally never had any kind of a meaningful bet on any horse, believe it or not. Horse to look out for is this season. Fancy Blue is the main one for us. She's the obvious one. She's obviously running the Guineas next weekend. And another interesting horse is a horse called Great House. He's a 3-year-old who's technically a 4-year-old. He's going to have to run 4-year-old maidens, but I think he's above average. And he might be one, just an interesting one to keep an eye on going forward. Am I going to have my first classic winner this weekend? Hopefully, probably not, but she's in great form. I think she's a good filly. She's going to improve. When she steps up and trip from a mile, if you're on a nice race, I'd be delighted, and anything more than that.
Visit barwinracing.com for best odds guaranteed and extra places every day on UK and Irish horse racing, extra places every week on major golf events, and double the odds on first goal score bets on selected games. Barwin Racing, your number one bookmaker, where the customer comes first. And remember to check us out on social media. At Barwin Racing is the Twitter handle to follow, where you'll find our daily specials on a range of sports.
Right, Frank. And what do we make of this? Albina, to me, looks the horse to beat, likes the Cora. Jessie's horses are flying. She looks like she should make into a 3-year-old. Now, the only proviso being that her fellow 3-year-old bombed, in the Fillies Guineas at Newmarket. What do you make of it?
Look, Albina, obviously what she's done in Longchamp after Blow Power run behind Love in the Meidler, she's entitled to be favoured, but she has got a wide draw to contend with, and given her style of race, and she tends to, take a bit of time to work into her races with a big field and liking to run through horses, she might just need everything to fall her way, and it might just not be entirely straightforward for her for things to happen properly for her.
Who do you like?
I was very keen on Redenza McAlford's in that, it was a shame we didn't get to see her after that maiden win in Leopardstown last August. I think she's a very, very promising filly, but not ideal pitching up into the Guineas. Dana Bryan runners, you'd wonder, you'd wonder who the first string is, given that we haven't seen the jockey bookings yet.
Jamie Heffernan has been booked. I've just checked this because I'm quite keen on one of them. Peaceful will be ridden by J.A. Heffernan. And So Wonderful will be ridden by W.M. Lorden, who has £8 in hand of her stablemate officially.
Yes, and if you look at the form strictly in the book, So Wonderful was ahead of Albania in that mile run. I know Albania decided...
She wasn't right that day, no, in fairness.
She wasn't herself. She never travelled, you know, so that you can put a line through that run to some extent. Look, I wouldn't like to split the Ballydoyle ones. Declan McDonough's picked up a good spare in Fancy Blue. She's a daughter of Deep Impact. And for Donica, obviously she's Donica's first runner. And she done very well to win on soft ground, only got up late on in that Silken Guider Stakes at the Curragh.
It'd be very strange to be tipping up a Thurles maiden winner to win a race of this nature, Dukie. But Peaceful to me is interesting because she looked like she'd progressed so much from her first start behind Redens at Leopardstown that day. She was then subsequently beaten a neck on bad ground behind Bournemouth Pride, who didn't boost the form at all in her reappearance. But I think she's an interesting filly. She'd be my shot in the dark in this race. What do you like?
Yeah, interestingly, the two I was interested in were Peaceful and Redenza. Redenza is fascinating.
Well, this is like this is like Countdown. You have to show us that you've actually written the same thing down here. You haven't just called us.
Well, no, I was in Leopardstown, and there had been word for her. She'd been backed all morning, and I'm looking at this going, Halford newcomer, this'll drift. And they just kept on backing her, and she was so impressive on the day. And I thought, right, but she's serious Moy Glare prospect. And then she disappeared. But before that race, the one that caught my eye in the parade ring was Peaceful, who was a really impressive specimen. I think she'll do really well from 2 to 3. That Newmarket race was a bit of a mess. I think she was caught out by track position. The ground wasn't ideal. Dunica was putting up a pound overweight. It was disappointing that the Haggis filly blew out in Kempton, but it was nearly too bad to be true. So I draw a line through that. So like you, in the end, I came down on Peaceful. I'm glad, actually, because I'd have backed her in the 1,000 guineas last week. And
she wouldn't have won.
I'm fairly sure it had done me dough, yeah. So basically, I can parlay that into tomorrow. I can't lose now, right?
What do you like of the remainder of the card, Yuki?
I thought it was very difficult. Maybe one that would be a price, Edification in the 6:15. He still appeals as a well handicapped horse to me. The boy Gavin Ryan takes off a handy £5. You'll remember him from being very unlucky in a Premier handicap on Irish Champions Day last year. I think he will go close. And then there's a good race. Speaking Colour sets the standard in the Gladness, but he does have to concede a penalty to Lancaster House, another alumni from Irish Champions Weekend. He sort of dirtied his bib, but he finished lame. He was very heavily backed. That was a proper race. I was surprised at how short he was, given he was coming out of albeit a stakes race win in Killarney. But they just couldn't get enough of him on the day. He's only had 4 runs. I'd say Lancaster House is a horse that will go forward this season. And if he does, he can probably take advantage of the weight concession from Speak
Fran, to Fuller. Thanks for that, Jude. Sorry, Fran. Florence Camille, Dermot Wells filly by Galileo. She was 3rd in a Cork maiden first time. Unknown Pleasures was 2nd. Passion was back and forth. And Salsa in 6th. Strong old form. I'd like her chance in the 5:10. That said, she's going to be running up against a load of very well-bred Aiden horses. But what do you like the rest of the card?
Yeah, look, Florence Camille's a standout in that maiden, Johnny. If you look at the handicaps, we're digging into tough races. I think in the first race, number 4, Presto, in a deep 2-mile handicap, Oliver McKiernan's horse, he shaped all right in Dundalk. But it's his form in Gorham Park, over 1.6. He beat Tony Munns' horse, Party Playboy, who was just beat in the Cesarewitch. And I think he's a relatively unexposed horse who will handle the ground. Shane Foley rides him. I think he's of interest. And in the 6:15, a very deep 1.5 handicap with a top horse, Vermilly of Joseph O'Brien's, has been bought out of the Aga Khan's. I think he'd only 4 starts, 1 treedom. He's been bought by the Lloyd Williams team with a view to hoping he'd step up to being a stakes horse to go to Melbourne. And he could be an exciting horse for this season.
Great stuff, lads. Yeah, you're not able to see this listener at home, but Fran Berry has done most of this interview with his hands just behind his head, kind of relaxing back. That's how much of a pro he is, Dukie. You know, we've a lot to learn.
Oh yeah. Well, we don't want to start blowing smoke up as hell, but he's got skills, the boyfriend. There's no doubt about it.
Another man who has skills is Jim Bulger. To me, this might be the most interesting part of the entire interview. He talks about Galileo. He talks about potential Royal Ascot runner, and he talks about a few other things. After which, we're going to give our three naps for the weekend.
Well, I'm probably make an entry for the Coventry, but I'm not certain that he'll go there.
Right.
Kevin wouldn't be able to ride him.
Mm-hmm.
Although Rory Cleary says he'd be happy to ride him and quarantine for 2 weeks afterwards. But
is that a pointer to his chance?
Sorry?
Is that a pointer to his chance? Then Rory'd be happy to forego 2 weeks.
He would be, yeah. He says he is.
I suppose there is a final point that your former protege, Aidan O'Brien, he still has a few years left and a couple of sons on the way as well.
Yes, yeah. They're all doing very well, and they've got a good stable of horses behind them.
Yes, that always helps.
Yes, yeah.
And I should mention as well, Jim, what young jockeys will you be using this season?
Well, I have two apprentices that have have made a breakthrough. And hopefully they'll continue to progress. Luke McIntyre and Willie Byrne.
Two good young riders.
They are, yeah. And two great workers.
That matters as well.
It's always a big help, yeah.
Thanks very much for your time, Jim.
You're welcome, John.
And if we see you sneaking in at the Curra, not that I'm allowed to go, but if we do see you sneaking in, we might turn the other way.
I doubt now you'll see me, you know.
Might be a mirage.
Well, the dam's name is Gold Mirage.
I'm going to say that I actually came up with that, but it was actually a pure fluke.
Yeah, right.
Thanks, Jim.
By the way, she's a Galileo mare.
Mm-hmm.
And I got her in the early days when nobody was saying anything good about her. And I picked her up for $40,000, so she's going to give me a nice return.
In terms of your achievements of your glittering career, where would it stack that you actually got Galileo right before others did?
Well, I don't know. I would get too excited about that. That was a stroke of luck, I suppose.
It worked out.
Yeah. There have been others well documented that didn't work out, but he worked out anyway. And although having said that, there wasn't any great reason to think that Sadler's Wells was going to come up with a sire, because he'd gone his whole career without producing a stallion.
Mm.
So if he hadn't produced Galileo and what was the fellow that came the following year? High Chaparral.
Yeah.
If he hadn't got those two, he wouldn't be the influence that he is today. And he left it very late in life. You know, he was probably 24 or 25 or 26 years of age before he got those two.
Well, in terms of his progeny, then I presume you'd have very, very high hopes for Frankel. What have you made of him?
Frankel will do very well. I'm not sure if he'll ever reach the heights that Galileo did.
Mm.
But he's certainly doing very well.
So are you, Jim, and again, thanks for your time.
It is quite mad, Fran, that, you know, Jim effectively took what was deemed to be a punt on Galileo. And I remember a time when Galileo was standing, his price dropped from 50 to 37 or 37 and a half. And look at him now.
Oh, look at him now. And it goes back to what we've seen with the Guineas winner last weekend. Johnny, with the first instinct of Andrew Bowling was to go for the Derby, but racing manager to the owner, David Redvers, said, do you devalue him by running or winning a Derby, which is ridiculous. But
I think he's been kind of contradicted that on Twitter himself, where he said, oh, I'd like to win the Derby, but I know what you mean anyway.
Well, you see, Harzand, you know, he's going to do well with his progeny. There's good reports, but, you know, he's not commercially viable, I suppose. And it's a shame to see, but Galileo is the ultimate, you know, advertisement of, of that. You know, he dropped after his first season, and you know, Jim Bulger, you know, he when he goes into his stallion, he goes all in, and he really got it right this time with him at the time.
Yeah, I should mention he was quite sweet on one of his horses in a maiden first time out. And that is Asseree in the 440, ridden by Kevin Manning. He's drawn 18 over the mile and two. Jim's quite sweet, though, on this son of Teofilo, who's out of Asseree, who, again, was bred by Jim. But it is time now for the naps of the weekend. We'll start with you, Juki.
Search for a Song runs on Friday at 7:45 p.m. in the Moorsbridge Stakes, and I will be backing her.
Just imagine if she stayed a Gold Cup trip, Fran.
I don't think her four gone ways will ever allow her to stay.
She's likely race, though. She's likely race. I mean, it might have been a day. It might have been a bit of an off day at the current. She still won.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but she's keen, Johnny. She's a four gone way. And I think the fact of dropping back to the 10 furlongs, you know, they're hoping that she's going to be high class at that trip, or a mile and a half, the in between from the mile and six to mile and a quarter, could prove to be in her best distance.
I agree with that. Yeah. Middle distance races this year, I think she'd be a huge factor in them all.
Fran, your nap of the weekend?
Nap of the weekend would be, I think I'm going to take a chance. I'm going to dip into handicaps. I'm going to say Presto in the 4 o'clock on Saturday. I like this horse, and I just think that form and what he's shown in Gorham was good. And if he's impressed with one of the main races, I suppose Vatican City, I'd chance him.
Let's get the view of Will O'Reilly from Bar One, and he has a bit of an eye catcher as well to look out for the weekend.
Most of the Irish Classics are coming up on Friday and Saturday. The Irish 2000 Guineas on Friday. Siskin is a strong favourite. 4 runs, 4 wins, but has never raced beyond 6 furlongs. Aidan O'Brien then has 6 of the next 7 in the betting as he bids to win the race for the 12th time. The late money is all for Lope E. Fernandez, who Shamey Heffernan will be riding. In the 1000 Guineas on Saturday, Albania is a strong favourite and carries a lot of stable confidence. Incidentally, this is a race that Aidan O'Brien has never had back-to-back wins in, and he won the race last year. We have a Guineas double on offer. Siskin for the Irish 2000 Guineas, Albania for the Irish 1000 Guineas, which, as I speak, is on offer at 10-1. We're also paying 5 places in the Irish Lincolnshire on Friday at 7:15. All this and a whole lot more on offer at bar1racing.com. An eye catcher maybe on Saturday is Jer and Me in the 4 o'clock race at the Curragh. He was well tipped up by Fran Berry when he won at Dundalk last time. Can he win again on Saturday?
Yeah, just before we wrap up, my nap is Nordic Passage. I just think he's basically a bit of a blank canvas as a sprinter, a bit like Skeptical, and exciting times for his connections. Lads, thanks very much for contributing as ever to On the Wire. And it is just great to have racing back, isn't it?
It is. Well said, Johnny. Let's be more chipper going forward.
Yeah, on that note, thanks. Thanks, Eugene. Thanks, you, Fran.
Pleasure, been fun, Johnny, and hope we have a good weekend where it looks like a proper weekend of racing in store.
And Fran, becoming Aidan O'Brien by using the word pleasure twice there at the end of the conversation. Thanks very much for listening.